Tonight we have with us Mike Weinstein. He has been a leader in Jacksonville for many years, has been with the state's attorney's office, has been with the mayor's office, and most currently is with Take Stock for Children. And I'm not sure what he's going to share with us tonight, but I know you're going to enjoy it.
All right.
Thank you. Can you hear me okay?
Yes.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
Can you hear me back there?
A little bit. Use the mic.
You can. Well,
I want you to stop here.
Here, I'll give you a second.
Go ahead. I can hear you.
All right. I'd like to talk a little bit and then answer questions. I enjoy that the most always. As many of you may know, I did withdraw today from mayoral candidacy for a number of reasons, which I'll mention. But as of, I haven't officially handed the paperwork in. I have to hand paperwork in to supervisors of elections to be officially out. But I announced today that I would no longer pursue the mayoral candidacy this particular term. First and foremost, I want you to understand what I do as work. I'm the president of an organization called Take Stock in Children. It's the only statewide mentoring and scholarship program in the country. What our program does is seek out middle schoolers that are poverty level middle schoolers. Eligible for our program means that you're at poverty level, federal guidelines. And we hook up with children that agree to stay crime free, drug free, and meet with a mentor once a week that we provide. We provide that mentor on school grounds, and we also buy for that child a 4-year Florida prepaid scholarship. Same scholarship that you would purchase for your children or grandchildren. And what that means is all of a sudden this child not only meets week in, week out with a positive role model, but the child begins to see their future to be a little bit different than it probably would have been without an understanding that they can go to college. Many of our children are part of the most difficult situations you can imagine. And colleges are not something they talk about around the dinner table or amongst their friends or what have you. So providing the scholarship to the child in seventh grade begins to change the conversation at home and change what their future may in fact be like. The child has to perform though for 6 years. It's nothing that we give to the child at that point. It's theirs, but they have to perform. So for 6 years, this child has to stay in school, keep their grades up and meet with our mentor, and at the end of high school they can go to college tuition free. We are very, very successful. If you look at the regular ninth graders across the state of Florida, 31% of your ninth graders will graduate high school and go on to some post-secondary. 70% of our children in ninth grade will be in college in 6 months. And remember, we're our at-risk population to begin with. So we don't save every child, but we do save many children. And if a child doesn't make it, the scholarship that we purchase for the child is repackaged for someone else. Or if a child only wants to go to school for 2 years, wants to be an auto mechanic or a welder or something else, whatever is left on the tuition is repackaged and given to someone else. So it's a very, very protected scholarship program, and it's very, very successful. It started here in Jacksonville. Barnett Bank started the program 11 years ago. And slowly but surely it has grown, and I have staff in every county, all 67 counties, run this program. We have over 12,000 students. We spend over $80 million. We're now spending about $20 million a year buying scholarships for these children. And it really does make a difference. And the reason I bring that up is because it's tied to a lot of things. We lose 3.5 million children across the country a year dropping out of school. One out of three children, now more than one out of three, we saw the article in the paper this weekend, our dropout rate is increasing. So we are now a little bit more than one out of three of Jacksonville's students will drop out of school. One out of two African American young men will drop out of school. 50%. One out of two. You put that over here, and then you also understand that 80% of the people in prison, approximately 80% of the people in prison are high school dropouts. There's a connection between us, and it's not just Jacksonville, us as a society, losing so many children, dropping out of school, and having the crime problems that were happening. They're connected. And we have an assembly line. We can deal with the crime problem by putting more police officers on the street, which we have to do. But we also have an assembly line of people that are falling into this hopelessness, and they're going to commit crimes. And we have two assembly lines. One is you drop out of school and you're done. The other is we get back 400 to 500 to 600 people a month from the prison system. They come back to Jacksonville. And you don't send people to prison and they don't come back. The vast majority come back. They come back to a system and a society that was hard for them to make it in the first place. Now it's almost impossible with the record that they have. So we have two assembly lines that are producing people that are going to commit more and more crimes. And we have to deal with that in some better way than we are today. We also have an issue, a downtown issue on homelessness. The way we deal with the homeless is crazy downtown. We have a number of shelters downtown, and really the only shelter that allows people to stay overnight and then stay in their facilities is the Sulzbacher facility. The other facilities that function as shelters brings people in about 5 in the afternoon, and then at 5 in the morning they have to leave. They have to leave the facility. And they leave and they hang around downtown until 5 o'clock comes again and they can go back in. That's not going to work. Downtown cannot become what we want it to be. The library is not happy at all because most of the people hang around Hemming Plaza. We have to do something different if we ever want people to live and walk around and enjoy downtown. That's an issue that's really important for us. The crime issue is an important issue. The homeless, as I mentioned, but education and the dropping out. And what I've done over the last couple of months, many of you may know I stayed in Cleveland Arms, which is an interesting place to stay. I stayed overnight, and basically 80% of the children at Cleveland Arms aren't going to go to high school and graduate. 8 out of 10 of the children, there are hundreds of children, will not graduate high school. If you go to an elementary school in the poorer sections of our community, if you have a class of 17 children, one will go to college. I mean, we have some severe challenges in this city. We're very unique as we're consolidated. We're a consolidated community, which means we have not only, you know, most communities have one challenge. They're growing too much, they're not growing fast enough. We're so large that we have all these challenges within the same governmental structure because we're so geographically diverse. And we have to deal with that in a more logical way, in a more effective way than most communities have to deal with their challenges. And I have found in staying out at Cleveland Arms, and I also stayed at night in Sulzbacher, the shelter. I spent a night literally sleeping on the floor, on a mat on the floor, because there were no beds available. And I came to the conclusion that these issues that we face needs more. The school board alone cannot fix our education, our dropout problem. The sheriff's office alone can't fix our law enforcement issue. And the fire department for sure can't fix our race relations issue. And we have fallen backwards a little bit on race relations. And I've come to the conclusion that we all have to work together as a community if we're really going to solve these problems that we have. And for me, to embark on an expensive and competitive campaign at this time, very unlikely successful, would not help us become more unified and address these issues. I felt that I would be almost adding to the problem at the end of March or April. We were divided, even more so than we are today, because I got 40% or 49%. He beat me by 1% last time we ran 4 years ago. And even if I won, I would have won with 50.01%, something like that, and would have had to spend a tremendous amount of time trying to unify the community again. And that's why I dropped out. I dropped out for two reasons. One is that I really felt that I could be doing more harm than good. And the other is that I had to be considerate to those that would provide financial support and volunteer time for me. that it's one thing for me to stay in the race and go to debates and try to hold them accountable, but I need money and I need help to make it even realistic. And I wouldn't feel comfortable persuading people to help me and provide me dollars if I felt in my heart that I really don't think I can get there anytime. As hard as I could possibly work and run the most perfect campaign, it still wouldn't be a probable win. And that's come about over the last couple of months. When I started this campaign, I sat around a conference room table, and we had the president of the fire union and the president of the police union and some very well-heeled people in the community and some political people in the community that all had a part. We had polls done, and it showed how I can win, how someone could beat the incumbent. But everybody sort of had a part to play, and we had to do certain things in order to ultimately be successful. And over about the three-month period, I lost the fire union, I lost some of the well-heeled people, I lost the political consultants, and then I lost the FOP. All for legitimate reasons, you know, they all had their own reasons. But at the end, I'm standing there basically alone, and very unlikely to be successful. And that's sort of all wrapped up together, made me decide this isn't for me. And I've let some people down, I've disappointed some people, but I think that it would be not appropriate for me to continue. And I've got such a great job. I was never looking for a job. I've got a great position helping lots of kids around the state. I just felt that I could be helpful in moving the community. I felt when I left 4 years ago, we had a lot of momentum. Well, I left a little longer than that because I had done the Super Bowl and done a few things. We had a lot of momentum in the community. Felt good about our city. Our race relations were better. Everything was moving forward in a nice way, and I think that we've lost some of that momentum over the last couple of years, and I wanted to try to bring that back, but finally decided that I didn't think I could. So that's what brought me to the decision I made today. I'm glad it's done, because I've agonized over it for quite a while. I was telling Chris my daughter had her spleen removed this morning. One of the questions that was asked at the press conference, how agonizing was this decision? I said it was agonizing to decide to get in and then to get out, but spending the morning at the hospital waiting for my daughter to get out of the surgery put it all really in perspective, and it's, you know, it's not about me. It's about other things. And so I'm very pleased and proud to, you know, have participated. As Chris said, I was very lucky here in the community, negotiated a Jaguar lease and went to Chicago when we brought the Jaguars home, and I did the Super Bowl, and I've done a number of things. I've worked with Charles Weaver in the State Attorney's Office, which is a great place to be. I was here from 77 to 91, and it was terrific camaraderie. It was a really special place to be for all those years. So I've been very blessed here. I have three children. My two boys are both married, live in Mandarin. My second son and his wife have a daughter. I have we have one grandchild, a granddaughter. And my daughter, who just had her surgery last Friday night, graduated from UNF, and she'll be a teacher. So I am really grounded in Jacksonville, stable in Jacksonville, and I will continue to help. I'm a board member of SCCJ. I'm on the board of the Police Athletic League, and I'm on the board of First Coast Crime Stoppers, as well as Take Stock. So I'm connected in a variety of ways, and will continue to be, and I'll continue to look for ways to participate and help. So I'm not leaving, for better or worse. Some people may think that's good, some people may think that's not so good. But there's lots to be done, and we've got it's a great community, but we've got some struggles ahead of us that if we don't take care of, they're going to overwhelm us. They're going to overwhelm us. And it's all tied to education. Education is the key. We improve education, we'll have, you know, fewer people on welfare, we'll have fewer people showing up in the emergency room with no insurance, and we'll have fewer homeless. I mean, everything that we want to improve is tied to education. If we work on education, and give you a sense of how some communities understand that. In Jacksonville, we have 450 students in Take Stock and Children. 450 students out of the 12,000. Are here in Jacksonville. Pinellas County, which is St. Petersburg, has over 2,000 students because they get it. They understand that's the investment to make. There's no other better investment to make than to educate our children. And we've got to get that. We've got to connect on that. One of the reasons I wanted to run for mayor is out of that $1 billion budget, I wanted to set aside $2 million every year so every child that showed up at school would know that they're not going to be kept out of college for a lack of tuition. If you go to school in Jacksonville and you graduate and you can do college work, and you don't have the money to go, you can go to FCCJ and then you go on to UNF and the tuition will be taken care of. Because that's really what Take Stock does, in addition to the mentor. And if every child shows up with that understanding, maybe their future could be different and they would behave differently. Right now they drop, and they don't drop out for academic reasons. Children drop out because they don't think it applies to them. They don't think it's going to make any difference. They're not getting bored. They're not dropping out because of academic reasons. Let me say one more thing about education, and then I'll open it up to questions. If you look at any industry in this country and look at that industry in the 1950s and the way that industry is performing today, with the technology changes and the understanding that we have today, they're dramatically different. The only industry that we haven't changed in 50 or 60 years is the way we educate our children. Those of us that have been in school long ago, we basically educate our children the same way we did 40, 50, 60 years ago. And it shows. It's not relevant. We're losing to the Asian countries. We're losing to countries that have modernized and have different ideas of how to educate the children to get them ready for the workforce. What we're doing is it's an assembly line from birth to the end of school to get them ready to go out into the world and earn money and be productive. And this assembly line, we haven't adjusted very much. And we need to. We need to get it pretty quickly. That's why you have the Bill Gateses and the Buffetts and the other people really providing some dollars, because they're worldwide. They see what's happening all over the world and see how far behind we are becoming. We don't have enough math majors, we don't have enough science majors, we have too many kids dropping out. We've got some severe problems if we want to continue to compete in the world economy. It's all about workforce. It's all about how we prepare people for work. So there's lots to be done, but it doesn't seem like I'm going to be in one position to help, but I'll try to help in other positions. Questions? Yes.
You talked about Take Stock and you talked about the mentor requirement. I know that you have funding, but you don't have as many mentors as you do funding, and you don't have nearly enough mentors as there are kids that are available. Do you want to tell us about some of the numbers as far as...
Well, every county is a little bit different. Some counties, they've raised enough money that they have more money than they have mentors. We only bring a child on if we can hook them up with a mentor and buy them a scholarship. It needs both pieces. There are mentoring programs that are out there, but they're not nearly as successful if they don't change what the future could be for that child in their mind. And there are programs that provide scholarships to children, but if you don't nurture them through, the scholarship's useless because they're already out and, you know, they're criminal and they're drugs and they can't get to college anyhow. So you need both pieces. And we need mentors. Not only do we need mentors for our program, but we need them for even if we didn't have the scholarship. I think every child in an at-risk environment should have a mentor. When we were doing the JCCI study, and then David was there for some of it, we learned from people. We had people come in that were in prison for committing murders. Young adults came in and talked to us as we did this murder study. And we asked them, what would have been different in their lives? What would have changed the direction? And almost all of them said they didn't have anybody to really tell them during their growth period right from wrong. They didn't have any males. They didn't have any adult caring about them. They learned from the video games and the movies and their peers on the street. They had no guidance of right or wrong. And that's what that mentor's there for, just to give them an adult perspective of where those boundaries are. They learn no boundaries of discipline. And then once they commit a crime and end up in prison, that's just a school for crime. You come out of prison much more capable than when you went in as far as committing crimes. So mentoring is so important. We need 5, 10, we need so many men. We need thousands and thousands of people willing to go and spend an hour a week, an hour every 2 weeks, just sitting with the child and trying to give that child an understanding of right and wrong. It's unbelievable how some children grow up in this community.
You know, Mike, I was thinking about a couple of years ago, we were at in Tallahassee, all of the representatives were in Tallahassee, I think Jacksonville Day. And what I had spoken to some of the representatives from the governor's office, and they were asking me if I was interested in doing what the governor did for the Tallahassee area. In other words, like we have city employees who want to do volunteer maybe once or twice a month to help out at their child's school or something like that, that would I write a bill where they would not lose their money for that day. And, exactly.
Yeah, they would be able to go to the school and stay on the payroll for the hour or so they were there. State employees are allowed to do that. Federal employees are allowed to do that. And many city employees around the state in different counties and different cities are allowed. If you work at CSX, if you work at Blue Cross, if you work at a lot of the larger companies, you can go and spend an hour or two a week on school grounds and not be docked that for pay.
Right.
When we tried to do that years ago when I was in administration, you know, you get the articles from the little pages of the world, oh, it's going to cost the government, you know, they compute an hour for everybody, a month or a week, and how much it ends up costing. They don't understand it as an investment. It was killed the last time we tried to do it because of the paper and the media trying to present it as a cost issue, an expense issue, never understanding that there was an investment side to this. So, anyhow, Charles.
Just to follow up, just following what you just said, at Blue Cross, I know people that did some mentoring. They also did the thing where they taught some adults who couldn't read, but they put in more time working because they didn't just work 40 hours a week. So they were really valuable to the company, even though they did that on a company.
Well,
time.
And so valuable, if you go to the businesses in Jacksonville and say to them, what's your biggest challenge? It's going to say the caliber of applicants that show up at their door.
Right.
I mean, it's really in the business's benefit to allow the people to help these children. I'm at FCCJ as a board member, as I said. 70% of the students that show up at our door need remedial work. They can't do first year community college level without remedial work. So we've got some severe issues and problems that we have to deal with. But I'll go to Charles with you then.
I have a question, but first of all, I want to commend you on your courage. I know that has been a very difficult decision for you, and I commend you on doing what you feel like you had to do, regardless of the decision. And that takes a lot of guts and a lot of courage. And I want to commend you for that. My question, though, deals with downtown. My office is downtown, and like a lot of folks, you know, I'm leaving. I get there early, and I leave late. And you see it firsthand of the homelessness situation when you work downtown. So if you had been elected mayor, and you were running, had been elected mayor, what would you do for downtown?
You need to deal with it. You don't want to make it so nice that you attract homeless people from all over the country. But we need some sort of a center. You needed a facility where you can do clinical work, where you can check their teeth and their, you know, like they do at Salzbacher, and you can get to the, even like a caseworker, to try to help this person get off of being homeless and get a job and what have you. And just literally a place that they can hang out at, so they're not on the streets of downtown Jacksonville. You need some sort of facility to do that. We did it during the Super Bowl. They took one of the warehouses and turned it into a facility for the homeless, so the homeless wouldn't be hanging around during the Super Bowl. We have to have a place for them so they don't walk around panhandle all day long as a nuisance, but also can get help. Because ultimately the goal is to get these people back. And a piece of this homeless puzzle is also affordable housing, which is a problem not only for Jacksonville, but for many of the cities in the state and in the country, to the point where it's getting very difficult for people that work at a service level to find affordable housing that they can stay in. But there are ways to deal with it, but you got to balance it, and again, not make it so attractive that you make it welcome. But most of the people that are here that are homeless are Jacksonville people. They're not coming up. They're not here from the north or what have you. And there's a criminal element hiding within that homeless element as well, which makes it bad.
I got two for you. Reflect a little bit on how you feel about, were your issues discussed while you were running for mayor enough?
The issues that I was concerned about, it was a learning experience for me during the months, but very little discussion. One of the things I tried to accomplish today in my announcement was not to make it personal about Mike Weinstein, but make it about the topics like the murder rate and dropout rate and race relations, and make it sort of a stepping stone to help unify the community, make them realize, make us realize how critical it is that we deal with them. But no, would it have been enough in a debate? I don't know, later on as we got closer to the election itself, I don't know. But no, there's been very little discussion. Now, this weekend there was a huge article on race relations in the paper and a huge article on education in the paper. And every day we talk about the murders, but now they're on B5 and 6, where it used to be front page. When the murder occurs today, you got to find it in the newspaper, where it used to be always on the front page. So the issues are still hidden, but much more open than they used to be. The homeless issue is more open than it used to be, because some of the downtown merchants have taken things into their own hands and tried to expose the problem. We had Wanda Lanier resigning, who was sort of the head of the homeless coalition. It was the head of the homeless coalition in town. She resigned out of frustration. So if someone's looking, they'll see more and more activity and notice about it. But no, not nearly enough debate, because we're still not marshaled as far as our resources go and really trying to do something about it. It may have to get a lot worse before people will really understand that we got to do something about it.
If Dave Siebert runs for mayor, would you support him?
I'll wait until you sign up.
Yeah.
I appreciate it. I know everybody, as Chris said, is busy. I wanted to come. I knew this timing was interesting with today, but I felt that anything that I can share, I'd like to be great.
Mr. Weinstein, I appreciate running for mayor. One thing to talk about was you want to stay involved in the community and all the different ways to build help yourself and staying involved and doing what you can. I'm going to ask that part. I'm surprised nobody's asked the question, but I'm sure you've heard it a lot. Just tell us what your thought is for your future as far as running for any office or locally or whatever you might do.
There are ways for me to help, the ones I'm already on, the board and whatever. There are also elected positions that allow me to stay with TakeStock. If I were to run for a local seat, a local legislative seat in the council, or run for a legislative seat in Tallahassee, I'd be able to stay with TakeStock and Children and help out the community that way. So I'm going to look at options. The idea of mayor 4 years from now is not something I can even think about. It's just too far away. And it's not that it was. Not that it's been so painful, but it's been a little difficult. The mayoral question. And we're going to probably have 8 or 10 people. Term limits has been an interesting process in Florida. You're almost locked in for the 8 years, and then when the 8 years are up, they come out of the woodwork. And we're going to probably have 8 or 10 people running for mayor in 4 years. So I don't know. But I am going to take a very serious look at Tallahassee. We need leadership in Tallahassee that will help out Northeast Florida. We're losing most of our House delegation because of term limits. So Charles ran last time, 8 years ago against Mark, and he barely won, probably less than even I lost by. I lost by 1%. I don't know if you're even under 1% in the law. It was close. And Charles is hopefully going to run for that seat again. And I'm going to look at maybe a seat that will allow the options in the future.
You've got talked about the Jaguars. That was a big thing that happened in Jacksonville. And then the Super Bowl. What do you see coming? Another big event like that? Super Bowl again?
Well, Super Bowl, it's going to be a long time. It'll be 10, 15 years.
But you think they will come back?
Yeah, but we need a lot of hotels. We're really hurting. The reason we have to bring the cruise ships in here is we have to have hotels. I don't know. I really wanted to change our outlook and make Jacksonville where education comes first.
Yeah.
I really wanted to change how we were perceived as far as education goes. I don't know what's on the horizon. We've got to handle the court. We've got a half a dozen things we've got to take care of. The problem of looking into the future is we're distracted by not getting things done in the present. So I don't know what's out there big time for us. I
just want to know if
anything
counts.
We're going to continue to grow. Grow.
You know, I just thought one more thing. She brought that up. I know that you have a lot of dealing with helping bring it here. Do you feel that the city officials, mayor, or whoever, done something wrong with money and just covering things up for the Super Bowl? I mean, not that you did.
We did a lot of things. I submitted a budget. It was probably about a $14 million budget when it was submitted, and we ended up spending almost twice that. But most of the things that were spent, and I was gone, you know, wasn't a requirement. It was done because it was decided to be done. We got the Super Bowl, and there was a foundation of things we had to do, and that was within the budget. The other things that were done were just add-ons that were discretionary. I don't think any monies were illegally or inappropriately spent, but some of the discretionary decisions may have been done differently, and the monies could have been used for other things citywide as opposed to the Super Bowl. I thought we did some things that maybe we didn't need to do. We didn't need to do them to get the Super Bowl, but we didn't need to do them to try to embellish it. They weren't part of my responsibility, so I don't know enough to make that decision. But we spent a lot more than we were required to do. The Super Bowl submission that I did again was, you know, maybe 18 million. The ones that are recently being done, the Miami one, the ones that are being awarded now, are almost in the 30s. That's how much it's grown since we did in 2005. The ones that are awarded now for 10, 11, and 12 are almost double the amount that we had seen. Yes.
What do you think about the convention center? Where do you think the city needs to move as far as the convention center?
What my plan on the convention center was, and I presented it 4 years ago, was that, first of all, we needed to move the courthouse. We needed to get off the river and build one court. The decision to build a half a courthouse was the worst business decision. Cost us twice as much. We'll have two security systems, two clerks going. And the worst thing we could do is have two separate courthouses. What I wanted to do was take the courthouse block and the courthouse parking lot block and the street in between the two and build a convention center space. And then RFP the air rights to another hotel that would build on top of our convention center. And therefore, we wouldn't have to build a very big convention center because we would have the Hyatt, which was the Adams Market, and they have more space than we already have. Between the Hyatt next door, the facility that we built, and the hotel that's on our facility would be together more than enough convention space that we could ever need. And we could use the purchased, you know, the selling of the air rights and the property taxes and the bed taxes of the hotel that's on top of the convention center to help pay for the convention center. And again, it wouldn't have to be as costly or as big. It would all complement each other. And they wouldn't compete. They wouldn't have to go out as separate entities competing for conventions. They would present themselves as a package. within walking distance, connected, on top of. And then I was going to have the old City Hall be a parking garage to complement and serve the convention center, and then maybe do something on top of the garage. Well, Langley would benefit tremendously from it, but it wouldn't necessarily be part of it. It would benefit because it would give people other things to do. And I presented that 4 years ago, and maybe, you know, who knows? Yes, ma'am.
Yeah, I'd like to ask a question to get some feedback here. If you have mentors to mentor these children, I really have to question if a teacher is qualified and she doesn't have the right to discipline children or talk to them without facing a lawsuit, what would happen in the case of somebody being a mentor?
Well,
would that be a setup too, where the kid could go home and said, my mentor said such and such, and then you get into it with the parents? I mean,
You always have that possibility. That's why we only mentor on school grounds. We don't allow our mentors to go to movies or malls or get in the cars with the children or whatever.
But my question is, why aren't the teachers able to mentor anyone without getting involved with an angry parent coming in? And
we have taken away most of the tools that teachers can use for discipline. You know, political correctness and lawsuits have wiped out many of the things teachers were able to use for discipline.
No, but my point is, years ago, I'm pretty well educated. I had one of the best educations in the city of Boston. And we're not going to use the abuse excuse here. I didn't really have any talents at all. And I was a high achiever, so there's no abuse excuse for any of this. But it was a different ball game. I'm sure every journalist in the country has to be an English major in order to be a journalist. And you hear stupid things like the people's voice. You know, they can't even speak English properly. And what my question is, why are they not given the right to be able to teach without any, and now they take the Lord's fear up. So how do you give a person the morality if your federal government doesn't want where do you stand? So even if being a mentor or taking a kid even for an hour, wouldn't you be in an awkward position?
A mentoring relationship's kind of unique. If you hang with it, at the beginning it's kind of difficult because you don't know each other, everybody's uncomfortable. But after a while, it turns into a relationship. Well, most of these kids, when they're in a classroom with 30 of their peers, they're not going to show any weakness, they're not going to show any kind of kindness. But when you get one-on-one, they'll tend to start asking questions. They're really looking for guidelines. They don't want to be shot at 25 or 30, they don't want to shoot anybody. And we're losing them. Once they go through middle school and get into high school, they're gone. But we hook up with them at the elementary school, middle school. We have an opportunity. We can't save them all. But we do have an opportunity to develop a different relationship that a teacher in front of 20 or 30 children won't be ever able to develop. But it takes the one-on-one, and it takes patience. And that mentor is not the enforcer, it's not a disciplinarian. That person is there just to sort of be there to listen and to help guide. I'm a mentor, my wife's a mentor, and it does work. Not all the time, but it does work. One other question over here, I thought. David, one more, Chris?
Yeah.
Okay.
I'm just curious, as a mayoral candidate, you kind of had your hands away from what the school board may be doing wrong. Speaking to Mike Weinstein as a citizen, is there anything, if you had to tweak the school board, you'd say this is the one thing that you're not doing correctly?
Well, if I were to be mayor or any individual, what I would like to see is a cultural change. The way we've done this in Jacksonville and most other places is we look at our school board as not only managing our school system, but owning it. It's really their school system, and sometimes we're critical and sometimes we're not. I think it's our system, it's the community system, that they're to manage for us. I don't want the mayor to manage the school system, but I want the city to help decide what the goals and objectives should be. I think that we have to develop a partnership where we talk about the dropout rate, we talk about things that we develop goals together as a community, and then we help get there. We can't force goals upon them and then say, go do it. We have to help them get there. I would like to see a totally different relationship where mayors in the past have said, you know, they're elected, they got their own budget, I hope they do well. And I don't see that. I think the mayor has to be much more involved in the future of Jacksonville. And there's nothing more important than education influencing how our future goes. And I think we need to be a part of the objectives and goals, and then let them go out and manage the system to meet them. But I would like to see a very different relationship. In the 30 years I've been in Jacksonville, I don't ever remember a community leader, a mayor, a council member setting goals or talking to the school board and together developing what the goals in the school system should be. So I would look to have it be a very different relationship, but I was not as mayor looking to run the school system. But I was as mayor looking to say, this is our school system, it's not yours, you run our system for us. And therefore we're gonna get more involved in what it is we want out of the system and help you do it. I appreciate things. I appreciate you listening and hanging with me. Maybe someday I'll be back.
Next month, I know we have